Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in to Immunize Wisely. I'm Jenna Schmutis. I've got Shannon Rowan on the line. And I do want to plug the station. This is listener-supported. And me and Brian, we want to keep on bringing great guests on to have interesting interviews, get the learning out there. So it's listener-supported radio. If you can donate, please do that. And tonight, I'm talking with Shannon about her book, Shots Fired, and the mountain of information that she's put into this book. But specifically, we also have another interest in the element of EMFs and EMFs' ability to do biological harm, along with the toxins in our environment and pharmacopoeia. So, you did. Okay. Thanks, Frank. He pulled up the clip of Dr. Paul from 2 weeks ago. Welcome back, everyone. Hour two of Immunize Wisely. My guest, Shannon Rowan, is we are talking about her book, Shots Fired, and we are also talking about digital effects, biological harm caused by EMF. And 2 weeks ago, I had Dr. Martin Paul on, and I pulled up a clip just as a reminder, a refresher of his stance on the effects of EMF and the relationship with addiction. Thanks, Frank.
We should consider to try to stop 110,000 people dying from what I consider to be chemical warfare being waged on the U.S. population.
I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah. Can I?
Yes, please do.
All right. When Henry Lai was doing his studies about 30 years ago, there were also two studies published, and I believe they were published by other researchers, that showed that EMF exacerbated the actions of addictive drugs. So whether EMFs themselves are addictive is still can be questioned. But there is really fascinating evidence that EMF exposures, you know, do exacerbate the action of addictive drugs. This could have a major role in the opioid crisis because, you know, if you have variable EMF exposures, you know, sometimes they're stronger, sometimes they're weaker, and you're getting major changes in how people are taking drugs, how their bodies are responding, you could easily lead to situations where people die of overdose, of, you know, apparent overdoses, simply because EMFs are making them overdoses.
Well, not to be too contrarian, when dealing with fentanyl and carfentanil.
Thank you.
Again, it's a rank ordering.
I, in my experience and what I've read also about EMFs, you know, the joint pain, the malaise, the fatigue, but pain in particular. Once you step in the door of an allopathic doctor, painkillers come up. And then the prescription. And then what happens when the prescription isn't filled anymore? That's when individuals might become depressed and turn to a different drug for a prescription, or they may even get handed something on the street. And I have a personal story here in Olympia of a childhood friend of my son's. She passed away a year and a half ago from fentanyl. And I do think that I look at fentanyl as chemical warfare because it's being brought into this country with force. The amount that's coming in over the border has intention, and it's disastrous.
Yeah, I would say that's true, and that, and just the predecessors, other drugs that we've allowed in, you know, and how that's really altered our society, and you know, the crime rates, and destroyed relationships, destroyed lives, literally. I mean, and also just in terms of relationship, but also just like people dying so young and tragically. But this has been an ongoing problem. And ever since we declared a war on drugs, seems to be when the drugs have come in more quickly, which is always interesting. Same with the war on cancer and everything else. Watch out when they declare wars on something, because be prepared for more of the same.
Right. And it's probably in the language. Well, no, it is in the language. And how there is an illusion around the language that they project. And it's the context of how people receive it. I'm sure there's think tanks that are out there saying, well, people hear this and they say, yeah, good, common good. And really, it's the absolute reverse.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of inversion. I mean, almost all the time. it's just, it's amazing. And I even just, I'm just going to give a little example because I think it's so interesting. I just, because I get so focused, in my research, I focus on language, on that manipulation, and even just the names that come up of, certain players and certain agendas. And I was just, it just struck me the other day that Roe versus Wade, right? That famous court case about abortion, that Roe means fish eggs. And Wade is somebody who disturbs the waters. So I just was like, how are the chances of that? You know, it's just so bizarre. And I'm like, what?
It's not a coincidence. That is not a coincidence.
Right. I mean, so we're just, it's happening all the time. And it's not until you really lift that veil, if you get out of the trance, because this is all about hypnosis, like you're saying. The use of language is about hypnosis. The screens themselves, like you said before the break, there can be other things happening with the screens besides just these electromagnetic fields. In fact, I pulled up patents for, literally patents applied that have, you know, been approved for mind control through screens. I mean, when I say mind control, they're using that term, I think, as emotional manipulation of emotions through pulsing on your LED screen, LCD screens. It's just different pulsing patterns at you can manipulate your emotions. So you don't really know when that's happening. And that can always be covert, you know, in something that you're downloading. Maybe it's just always happening. Maybe it happens when you're online. Maybe it happens when you go to different websites. It's hard to know. It's like subliminal messaging. And this has been perfected over, you know, decades. I mean, you know, there's audio, there's subliminal audio, and that we could be not aware of that happening. So the visual and the audio and the use of colors. And I mean, we've been studied like lab rats for a long time. You know, and this is where, this tech addiction, I was just studying today a little bit, reading, he just makes me ill, but I had to read some of stuff. His name is Nir Eyal, N-I-R-E-Y-A-L, and he wrote a book called Hooked, and I forget the rest of the title, but it's about behavioral, how to make your product more addictive. Like, it's about what he calls behavioral design, and to change the behavior of your, you know, consumer through your product. Yet he comes out, now he's coming out and trying to help us to get out of the addiction trap that he helped these big companies create. It's amazing. So he has like a new book about how he's using this argument that these companies, that all these, you know, very powerful entities use, and it's to blame us for the ill effects of their products. He's saying we shouldn't use the word addiction, and that it's not the fault of the products that he helped design to be addictive. It's our fault for not seeing that we're more powerful, that we should be powerful enough to withstand this onslaught somehow. So he's going to help us see the traps that he helped create and how to, and help us how to avoid them. How do we avoid them? By more apps. You know, he's got apps for scheduling every minute of our time, every minute of our day now has to be scheduled with an app in order to avoid the trap of the distraction that he helped create. And I just can't believe it, but he's for real. He's saying this stuff. So, no.
Monitoring the chat, Max 2099 says they're going to flip the 5G switch and just fry everybody's retinas. I see it coming. But as far as the video addiction and the gaming addiction, specifically with young males, because I had talked with ex-military, he's actually a game designer, Bantam Joe, when I was on Facebook, and he was one to verify that so many of these first-person shooter games were designed to capture young men so that they just don't want to leave. That's what they want to do. And then, sure enough, they can be monitored and, at the same time, encouraged to join the military.
It is like a recruiting program, isn't it? It does seem that way. And it's actually because they use those kind of programs in the military for training. You're basically getting training. You know, you're getting, what do they call it? The words just escape me, what kind of training. But yeah, that's happened to, I mean, of course, you know, people that's happened to. I knew people that, you know, were really into this kind of gaming and they joined the military. That's what they end up doing. They're already partly trained. So yeah, it's definitely
absolutely
intentional there.
Yeah, because while Zadi was down, my son Zadi, he was down on the base. I'm like, well, what do you do at night? You guys don't leave the base? He's like, it's quiet. Everyone, when they're off shift, they're all with their game boxes. That's what they do. And it's just a culture that I'm unfamiliar with. So I was interested to just like get more information, but they were given the whole VR bodysuit, headset, everything, so that either there were studies being done to collect more information, or it was like a program training scenario. But with the classes, they also were given like the full Monty suit.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is the pull of the virtual reality is what we have to really watch out for now, and with young people, you know, and I think there'll be plenty of people of all ages getting sucked into it just so they have already with so many other aspects of technology. But this is the push next, is really to take us out of our surroundings and, you know, replace it. And then in that sense, like the problem at the same time, there's this like ecocide going on in so many forms, and it's like people won't even notice they won't notice when that natural world is gone, because they'll be in this other fantasy world, right, that they think they can help create instead of like doing the hard work of helping save and create our surroundings around us, you know, that nourish and sustain us and nourish and sustain all life. It's like people who have had their heads down so much now, they don't look at the sky, haven't noticed chemtrails. And that program really amped up as the smartphones came out. And there's no coincidence there, because people are so distracted and looking down all the time that they don't even notice. They haven't noticed. They haven't noticed the cell towers going up. You know, they haven't noticed this prison being built around them and the degradation of their environment. They're too distracted, and their parents are too distracted. And everybody's just, you know, constantly, it's like the new Soma, you know, from the Brave New World. They're just, it's looking for the next hit of dopamine and entertainment, whatever that form is that appeals to them. It's there, it's tailored for you. And of course, like you said, young boys are going to be interested in these kind of the violent video games. And that's the other thing they do when they're studying, when they make these games and design them, is they study kids, and they have them play the games, and they look out for their pulse, you know, increasing. They attach them, you know, they monitor their bodily reactions. So they design the games so that they will stimulate them to the point of like, you know, even sweating and having like really fast heartbeat and that adrenaline rush, right? So they want that. And the more adrenaline rush, the better. Of course, that depletes the adrenals and is really devastating physically, but also in all these other ways, because it makes the regular real waking hours in life outside of that boring and, you know, not up to par. So you're so like now the natural world and everything around has to compete with like this other new reality that's being, you know, that they're getting sucked into. They call it reality. I mean, a silly word, but yeah, to call it that even is like.
And us as adults, we can understand the partial attention deficit disorder where, you know, we're multitasking, but with younger people, especially the very young, they don't have a sense of time yet. You know, they really don't understand time because they haven't had to, you know, punch a clock and grow up with the clock being an important part of their lives. So it expands beyond this behavior set. And we do need to, whenever I'm out in public, I love talking to kids. Just integrating, here's this big face with glasses on talking. Hi, how are you? Glad to see you here. What are you doing? You know, all of those opportunities to interact with young people, catch their attention, and bring them into the now. And I love that we've had so many interviews with Galilee Carlisle, which Ingrid's had on a couple times. The name of her group is Heads Up. It's not necessarily a group, but it's a whole theme. You know, heads up. Catch your attention.
Yeah, that's great work she's doing. I've been in touch with her again recently, and she's really helped me see a lot of this as well, and the what's happening. Getting them out of that and getting ourselves out of it. I mean, the problem is, of course, with these addictions is the parents are usually addicted to, not always, you know, but because there's so much influence with other kids, you know, it's so normalized. Like, this very extreme behavior is now normalized. So it's really it's harder and harder for people to see this. But if you think back, and it hasn't been very long, it was very rude to use a cell phone in public on a train or whatever, or at the dinner table. And now it's just expected. It's expected, you know, we expect to be interrupted. We expect to take second place to technology in our conversations with people and in our relationships. And that doesn't feel very good, but we all put up with it because that's just what's taken over and normalized.
Oh, absolutely. And the additional surveillance, monitoring, tracking with what we've accepted as shopping with the Amazon trucks. And, you know, as they go up and down or around in this area, because we're somewhat rural, but when they're around, I'm like, I know that there's cameras. Like, they're being surveilled, we're being surveilled, all the addresses are being surveilled. And the amount of information that is available out there is worth, it has been financing these high-end trucks that do what they do, because it's one of the biggest corporations on the planet at this point, as I can see. And the COVID did that. You know, it encouraged people to stay home, get on the computer, use those items, whatever they needed, to be delivered to the door through Amazon. And that's another evil aspect that I wanted to mention.
I'm glad you brought up the surveillance, because that's the other thing that we've normalized and accepted, because, you know, anybody with a smartphone standing near you could be recording you and they don't know it. And it's like, I forget that, you know, we let our guard down now. And we forget, we act as if we're in private when we're not. And we forget that everything's recording us when we go out anywhere all the time, you know, potentially. I mean, more than likely, and kids expect it. Kids are growing up with this. They don't know any different. They don't realize that that's a hallmark of a totalitarian society. You know, they don't know that why privacy is important. You know, how are they going to defend it when they don't even know it's important? We all just sign our rights away every time we open up a web browser most of the time, or, you know, sign into any kind of computer app or phone app. It's like you just gave that up. And they're tracking us in ways that are really hard for us to fathom, because it's like we don't see it. It's not something we're always seeing. We don't see the cameras or the microphones. But also, when you're online doing anything, something can be tracking you, and you didn't know you agreed to it. And meaning, tracking how long you're even hovering over something to click it. You know, that you, how fast you click on something and then off of something. I mean, we're being studied like that on that level.
Sure.
Why? You know, and then you have to ask why. Well, just because we want to tailor ads to you. I think it's way beyond that. You know, they want to tailor your experience, your life, your reality to you. And that's going to mean taking you out of your physical world and then putting you in something else and like imprisoning you in this, you know, because the internet is expanding into something beyond what we think of the internet right now. It's something available to us through devices. It's like going to be like the internet of things, the internet of nature, meaning like everywhere around us all the time. Embodied internet, embodied, you know, they use these kind of terminologies, 3D spatial embodied internet, you know, which also means, of course, ubiquitous EMF everywhere, just destroying everything. We already know the destruction, the effect on insects, on microbes, on birds and bees and ourselves. And I mean, amplifying that is obviously going to have disastrous effects. And we can't allow ourselves to just sleepwalk into that trap. And that's what it feels like is happening.
Yeah. I agree. So I do want to invite callers in. If you want to call in, it's 512-248-8252. 512-248-8252. The last half hour, we traditionally take callers. If you can stay on topic with comments, questions, concerns, we welcome that. And I want to, let's see, oh yeah, announce Shannon's website again. That's what I want to do because I know we're coming up to a commercial pretty soon. And all the podcasts that you do, which are amazing. And I really like that you're talking with Sophia Smallstorm because those are really great conversations. So Wi-Fi refuse. What's that?
Sorry. Thanks for listening to them.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Wi-Fi-refugee.com. And you can also order books through your website. Is that correct?
If you contact me through the website, yeah, I can hook you up with a signed copy if you're in the U.S.
Great. All right. Well, I guess I can go back to the chat room. Let's see. Scott Screen says, after seeing how FDA approved all in the minerals and supplements shows, even someone like Dr. Wallach will only be able to get tainted ingredients. All agencies infiltrated, worse and worse. Can't trust nothing.
Yep. Well said.
Yeah. Because one of the chatter was saying Dr. Wallach has proven that there's an efficacy of vitamins, and Scott Screen was battling that.
I see.
Yeah. And this is off subject, but it's studies say intermittent fasting is dangerous. Who funded it? And there's a couple links. And that is something that me and Brian have been thinking around with, intermittent fasting. And I just like not cooking three meals a day. And
yeah.
We've gone to two. And it seems pretty easy as we're getting older.
I've tried it. I mean, I typically have a really light breakfast, or I have it late sometimes, or I sometimes skip it. But I think that's something that you'll have to see how you feel with, because I'm not really, in general, in favor of fasting. I think that it's basically another just starvation, and why make yourself do that? You know, I mean, some people argue, well, you should prep yourself for possibly starving, but why should we do that either? Your body's going to do what it has to do when it starves. I mean, anytime you're fasting, you're not cleansing, you're compensating for not eating. I mean, I'm not saying like if you just eat later in the day, I don't know. But I mean, it didn't work for me to do like the whole, what they call intermittent fasting, in terms of how long that to go without food, because I just felt like I'd get low blood sugar and it wasn't healthy for me. But again, it's like, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody what to do with that, but I am wary of fasting cleanse type, you know, regimens. There's a lot of those kind of pushed on us. A lot of like different kinds of fasts and, you know, supposedly to cleanse, but I wonder if I like the word cleanse because I think of ethnic cleansing, you know, cleanse us. It'll cleanse us. All right. Cleanse us off the planet. It works really good, that master cleanse.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are you monitoring the death counts now at this point, as far as, have you been monitoring anything? for the past like
not
year.
Recently. If you're talking about who, you know, having the shots, you mean who's had them,
yeah.
and if they're
yeah.
that's gotten up to. Yeah, I mean, it was already so high when I was writing my book. I haven't looked at recent numbers, but have,
right.
do you know? Have you looked at them?
No, if it's continuing, but I know just in my personal family, two young people. It's like extended family, but two young people just dropping dead unexpectedly, 22 and a 14-year-old. And so I do think that things are still happening, and it's possible that this bioweapon it's not immediate like chemical warfare. And that's one
right.
thing that I've learned. There's a difference. Chemical is immediate. Everybody just drops dead now. And then the biological could take time. But, yeah.
Well, there's chemicals that take time, too. I mean, I see what you mean in terms of just calling them different things. But obviously, like we were talking about earlier, just that these chemicals, ubiquitous chemicals, a lot of them are slow kill. And so, yeah, it's hard to know sometimes what to point to. By the time somebody dies, there could be multiple factors. And I think, but yeah, I feel like the recent, that these shots are definitely implicated in like, a big cull happening still underway, especially when we look at those, unexplained, supposedly, that not, you know, you have the ones that are directly linked to the jabs that are like listed that way. And we know that's only usually 1% reported. And then you have all these, like, just the rise in deaths that are with unknown cause, you know, all mortality, rise in all mortality all over across the board, across the world. And I think, and I'm, like you said, it's like we already, I don't have to look online because I can't always trust statistics, but I know from my own experience and my circle of connections that I'm hearing about these all the time as well. They're not very far removed from me. And then of course, other people I know, they're not far removed from them. And so that gives us, kind of tells us all we need to know, that how far reaching this is. I mean, it's tragic and it's horrible. And it's like, but I just got a report. I was just told about, I heard about two more deaths recently from people who took the shots myself. So.
Yeah. And then there's just silently suffering, because I have a handful of friends that wouldn't admit. One is a cousin, and like she knows she was vaccine injured, and she was forced through teaching in Illinois to get a vaccine. And she has to, like, every couple weeks she has to go into the hospital for anaphylaxis and have her EpiPen, and she's suffering. But still functioning, and that says a lot about our economy. And it's a difficult time, and especially with the open borders. And it does answer a question: if they're replacing a population that declined or weakened to the point where they can't work, that's the reasoning in my mind, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that reminds me of this vitamin D stuff that, like, you know, when I was saying earlier that it's like it's a hormone, a steroid, and they're actually, you know, really focusing on making people take this who are already overweight. They're saying that obese people are lacking vitamin D and it's going to cause more weight gain. So they're obviously trying to, like, I feel like, depopulate with this, you know, things like that. It's just coming at all angles.
Yes, indeed. Okay, we're heading into a break, and we are taking calls, so that you're welcome to call in and give us a piece of your mind. Yeah, just stay tuned. Thanks for listening.
Tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email proudsouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. This is Jenna Chaputis, and I'm interviewing Shannon Rowan, and we're welcoming calls. If anyone is interested in commenting or giving Shannon a question, you can do that. It's 512-248-8252. If you want to call in, you're welcome. Shannon, I did recall that you worked on Welcome to the Masquerade with John Hamer, and
right.
And he may have helped a little. He was supportive with Shots Fired, but do you still collaborate in writing with him?
You know, we were planning a second book, but it's just not been something we can coordinate. He just hasn't had time to write. He hasn't been writing for a long time now, so... you know, he just said, I can't do it, you know. So he actually admitted he might just be doing one more book, and he's hoping to do that soon. But I may go ahead and do the book we were planning, which is about transhumanism, after I finish a few other books first. But we are in touch quite a lot, though.
That's great, because that information share, because he's over the pond And there's some things, I even think that the internet censors in different various areas where we just don't get news that they get over there, or they get news about our country that we don't get ourselves. So I think that's really great to have allies over the pond.
Yeah, you know, we forget that the internet changes when you're in a different country. So much for the World Wide Web. But yeah, you're right. It's like, I mean, certain things you can find the same, but I'm sure a lot of it, search engines, everything is just probably, calibrated differently. But I also maintain contacts in other countries, and, you know, I've made friends with, like, one of my hosts down under as well. So, and I have another friend there anyway. So I do get news from Australia and some other countries.
So why do you think Australia got hit so hard with all of the lockdowns?
Yeah. Well, I think because it's basically a crown state, just like the Canada, right? So we're seeing that tyranny in play. And, you know, it's always been, unfortunately, I hate to say it this way, I mean, even though it felt like, it seemed like a very free place to be for a while, we even thought about moving there. But it was a prison state, you know, a prison country. That's what it was designed for initially, I think, from England, right, to set their prisoners there. And then I think they just still view it the same. The crown still sees it as like a place to, a place to experiment upon people and to imprison. But they're also have a fighting spirit, I think, as well, that is, you know, a camaraderie with us in America as like a frontier kind of landscape, and people who have been very independent as well. And there's certainly been a lot of pushback. At least now people have, there's a lot of lawsuits over the mandates, the vaccine mandates that have, and some that have been won. I mean, a lot of, you know, tears and pain and money and loss of jobs and lives, you know, leading up to this, but certainly people that are pushing back and fighting this.
Yeah, so when I think about people pushing back that have, like, a lot of public attention, I think of RFK and the Children's Health Defense. And it was my understanding that back in just 2021, they filed a lawsuit against the FCC to update the safety levels for non-ionizing radiation. And I don't know if you follow that sort of thing, but I know that Children's Health Defense has a they took a stand on, they became prominent in as far as alternative news and in the COVID era as well. And I don't know if they are representing people or not, because I question the RFK. I don't know if you have opinions on it, but I do know their lawyer mentioned in like 2016 in an international setting at the UN that the rights of the individual need to be weighed against the rights of the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, Kennedy's, I'm not really sure about either. But, I mean, I think, yeah, he says a lot of great things. And but then again, you know, it is the Kennedy-like dynasty. And, you know, running for president and all that was trying to do that. So I mean, you know, part of me, it's like that kind of, what they call it, bait and switch or something. You kind of feel sometimes that we get misled by people like that who become prominent, and then we like get our hopes kind of, you know, set on a savior. And you think, because I did think, well, if he got to be president, maybe that would be a great thing. I mean, he's spoken out against 5G and vaccines. I mean, surely he would do something, but who knows if he got into office, if he would do something. And if that, I mean, because politicians always lie to us and mislead us, you know, so.
that's what they do. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know that I wouldn't bank on something like that. I wouldn't put my faith into one person like that, or especially given kind of the family background and privilege and everything. But I mean, I'm glad they've done, seems like they've done some great work too. I mean, I noticed they didn't want to touch the kind of question the virus narrative or anything, go that far with it, you know. Which is unfortunate, because we have to do that. We have to question these things in order for real change to happen. Because if you're going to still say okay to that one thing, the big thing, you know, germ theory and everything, and not question it, which is all fraudulent science, and not question that and bring that in, then you're going to have always an excuse or a place for there to be laws, emergency laws, and for somebody to declare pandemic and contagion, right? And like, if we take that power away, then they can't even do that. And that power can't be taken away until we question these things. So when anytime I see somebody not wanting to do that because they're afraid of their career or whatever, well, then, you know, they're not being the kind of courageous person we need them to be. You know, we need people questioning this and at least letting there be different opinions, you know, like not having this tyranny, medical tyranny of like, this is one way of viewing disease and one way of fixing it and the whole world agrees upon it. You know, there should be room for people to debate and to have different opinions and to make their own choices when it comes to their bodies and health. And that's what, you know, where, and this is where it always comes back to this, the one world governance, the fact that there is something called the UN and the World Health Organization, and that these are collaborating together to supposedly help us. But obviously we're not even able to vote for these people. We're not, you know, these are just entities that are self, you know, that are declaring themselves our leaders, and we didn't vote for like the EU, like you mentioned earlier. I mean, yeah, because the EU is already like working like a communitarian entity, they can just make these laws, make these decisions, overriding any of the, you know, member states' laws and what the people want is important in that case. And we're going to see the WEF, you know, involved, I mean, already involved in this. And what's really scary is something like, do you know, you're familiar probably with Codex Alimentarius, which is like the food, you know, safety governance branch of the UN and the World Health Organization collaborating. And they actually oversee things like food fortification laws and mandates and enrichment laws and mandates. And there's a push to like put, so they've been putting these toxic chemicals they call vitamins in certain foods for a long time. And they, so far they've only really been able to do it to foods that have already been dramatically altered, like white flour opposed to whole flour, whole grain substance, because they're saying, well, this has been stripped out of it. So we have to put back the vitamins we stripped out. And same with like skim milk or homogenized milk. But the problem is now some are calling for, I mean, by some, I mean, people with patents, with interests, with monetary interests in this, like chemists. I think I've seen some papers with scientific, supposedly, you know, appeal to Codex Alimentarius, appeal to the UN World Health Organization to mandate folic acid, which is supposedly one of these B vitamins, to be added to all grains across the board for any UN member nation, including whole grains. And so not just white, right? So it could get to the point where we can't get grains that don't have this in it. And they're saying the excuse is that it looks like it prevents some kind of rare birth defect if the mothers consume this. But at the same time, they admit that it could cause these other problems. And they're really trying to target, again, target, operative word, target mothers, target, you know, childbearing age women. Yet they still want to put it in the whole diet of the whole population just in case, so that it'll get to them. And they admit they have no way of monitoring this or regulating it or how much somebody's actually going to eat of said, you know, product, along with another product that might also have the same thing in it, and when it might be too much. But that's the kind of evil that's happening. You know, the fact that like this other organization outside of our, even our own government, can make those kind of sweeping decisions that affect us so profoundly is, you know, should be outrageous. And most people just don't even know what's happening.
Right. And the global, well, built upon the history of how they forced global economies and that squashed and then set the food prices for the farmers. You know, it was like somebody out there decided this is the price that you can get per bushel. And that's how it drove down the cost of producing it. And the people that are pretty much slaves working like seasonal harvesting labor throughout this country, it happened everywhere, and this is how they've just done this. And also, for some reason, you know, I love getting dirty in the garden. You know, that's just like my personality. But somehow, it's just this lower class, idea of this is your job, this is what you do, oh, it's lowly, but it's so important. And I think that over time there has just been this idea pushed upon people throughout time that you don't have to have that direct connection to your food. And I think it's irreversible at this point. We have to. You have to in one way or another. And if you can, do it, of course. And if you can't, find someone that you know does and does it naturally, right?
Exactly. And this is, of course, they're attacking food and our ability to produce food because, you can't have people doing that and being healthy and outside of this net of, control. But, did you see some of these farm protest videos in Europe, like in France, and where they were, the farmers actually were dumping like manure onto the banks, came in with their tractors and put manure in front of the banks. It was great. But,
And they dropped off lots of garbage and tires and set them aflame.
Yeah.
It was great to see that because, the farmers have been pushed and the economy is just not working. It's like we do have a caller. Wonderful. We have Lark in Texas on the line. What an honor. Hi, Lark.
Hey, lady. Howdy, ladies.
Well, hi.
How are y'all?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I couldn't help but call in. I'm hearing two cute chicks talking like they got brains. It's pretty exciting. So, anyway, the reason I called is because I wanted to touch upon a couple of things and see if I can get some feedback, especially from you, Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
There's such a thing today as continuous partial attention. And it's differentiated from something called multitasking. Multitasking is when we set about to accomplish a lot of things in a within a tight schedule and we're looking to actually accomplish something. But continuous partial attention is an affliction which is brought about by addiction. And that means that we are directing our attentions hither and fro, in a disjointed, chaotic manner, continuously. Now, I know that's a mouthful, but that can be found at lyndastone.net/FAQ. Now, the question I have regarding addiction, and especially internet addiction, it seems to me, I remember Nikki Rapon and I, more than 10 years ago, came to the same conclusion, and that was nobody reads anymore. They don't read. And so this brought me back to this idea that I want you to comment on. Back in the 60s, there was a book that came out. It was called Be Here Now. Be Here Now. And it was written by a guy named Dr. Richard Alpert, who changed his name to Baba Ram Dass. BABARAMDASS. And it was a huge seller. It was a bestseller. And the reason it was so popular is because he took simple ideas and he put as few words as he could to them. And then he arranged the pages of the soft bound cover book into almost a cartoon like format, like a children's book, if you will. And the message it was delivering was quite powerful. It was just pretty much like the title, Be Here Now. And, of course, it was at a time when a lot of Eastern religion was being injected into American culture. Yoga was becoming popularized. And this spawned other similar type books without the illustrations, like, for example, Jonathan Livingston Seagull. The listeners can search these things, because I know I'm a little older. And but RBN's got an older audience anyway, so maybe they can relate. So my question to you is, I wonder if today the genius in terms of affecting communication, getting a message across, may be in actually our paucity of words as opposed to our wordiness. I wonder if you might want to comment on that.
Well, coming from somebody who uses a lot of words when I write, yeah, I mean, what am I supposed to say to that? Yeah, I mean, I am trying to make this a shorter book, by the way, everybody, but shorter for me probably means 400 pages or 500 pages. But yeah, I mean, I think I see the point that people are unfortunately increasingly illiterate. And they don't read, but I like to encourage reading. I think we need to be doing that. And that's an antidote to all of this, you know, invasion, tech invasion. So an antidote to the addiction as well. And this sort of what you're calling continuous partial attention is, yeah, thanks for differentiating between that and multitasking. Like what we traditionally think of as multitasking isn't really what's happening now. It's more that we have an illusion of doing that, but what's really happening is our attentions are continuously divided, and it's continuously, it's partial. I mean, there are certainly good, there are writers who are really concise and can use a few words, and one of them is James McComiskey, a friend of mine now after the years of being in touch with him, and who wrote the foreword of Shots Fired. And he just came out with a book called Overcoming the Germ Theory Medical Myth. And I have a contribution to that book. So that's a good one to look out for. But I think we all can add like our own voice in different, I think we all need to be contributing our own, you know, unique approach. And mine is a bit wordy, and I probably won't be changing that anytime soon. But there's, like I said, there's different ways of presenting information and reaching people. And certainly there are going to be people who, you know, need it to be really concise and to the point and aren't going to read one of my lengthy books. But I think that there are people who also want to dive in deep. And I think there is a place where using language and a lot of words is helpful and helps to help us to understand something more deeply. And I mean, I do actually read 19th century literature still sometimes and talk about, you know, language and wordy, but they use words that we don't know anymore. You know, our language is being reduced along with everything else, culture. And this is why I think we should fight for it. And instead of maybe giving in and just saying, okay, I'll just show pictures. I'll have a picture book. You know, that's kind of like what, you know, that would lead to is just like, well, people can't read anymore. So here's some images and hopefully that'll reach them. So, anyway, but I appreciate you. I understand what you're saying, and I for the points you've made and for your call.
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah. Just a quick follow up, and I'll jump off. But yeah. You know, there was a famous semiotician, a French semiotician. He was also a communist, but he had a famous quote that it stuck with me all these years because I'm interested in language. He said that. Writers needed to be less writerly and more readerly. And I thought that was quite interesting because, I mean, I myself am wordy, okay? And I like to read. So I'm not the kind of guy that would put a book down or feel daunted by setting out to read a 700 or 800 page book. But I just think that the young people nowadays, they have the attention spans of fleas, it seems to me. And so that's the only reason I even bring this up, because, y'all are a couple bright ladies, and I kind of think that you would mull it around and think about it. Because in this day and age, our ability to connect or repel is almost instant. When we encounter other people, even over the internet, even in real life. And so if you don't make a connection, or you do, it's usually going to happen in all of about 8 or 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, thanks for taking my call.
I'll just, if I can comment on that real quickly, you know, this is sort of like, they call it the attention merchants. You know, this is what's happening to us. This is what all these companies are vying for our attention. And they're trying to keep it as long as possible. And that's sort of like the age we're living in, because it is also the age of distraction because of that. But, you know, I read a lot as well. In fact, I read probably a few books per week. I'm always reading. And I do try to write in a way that is like something I want to read, because I read a lot of stuff I don't like reading. I read people's research I think is great, but I don't like their writing style. And it's hard, and I have a hard time getting through it. So what I'm trying to do in my writing is to read a lot of other people's writing, you know, get their research, gather it, and then present it in a way that I would want to read. So I hope that's working, but that's what I aim for.
It is, and I love how you inject some humor and sarcasm. And in Wi-Fi Refugee, some of your drawings, which were hysterical. And I think that you have a craft that I hope is a renaissance in the literary world. So I really do encourage people to get shots fired, vaccine weapons, medical tyranny, and the war against humanity, because you can connect with Shannon directly. And I think that if we, like, our age group, our ability to discern, it is really important that we beef up, because we have to be the ones that are able to communicate in our own ways, choosing the words that we have with the people around us. And the challenge is all set on us, because there's very few people around that have their heads up. So we have to catch those few little opportunities that we do get while we're here, because we're alive. So let's see. In the chat, I have, Merbili is adding a couple comments. She was bringing up a promoter of local organic farming practices and committed to freedom of choice when it comes to food and health, and mentioning the name Emma Curie in the UK. Very good. Decisions are made which affect our health. We have to bring these issues to life and tell the whole story in a meaningful, relevant way which engages and awakens the public. We must decode the jargon and bring its implications to light. That's well said.
Yeah.
We only have a couple minutes left. Okay, Shannon, okay. Do you have any parting words?
Seconds. Thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the conversation, and buy my books, go to my website, wifi-refugee.com.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Shannon. I enjoyed it.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, listeners. Have a good night now. Bye-bye.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle, or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.